but I had no illusions she wouldn't try to open them first chance she got. At least I had money again. And maybe that was the solution to the problem. I took a room on the ribbon station, left Savard in there with instructions to wait, and went to recover my possessions. When I returned, she was sitting on the single bed, no linens or blankets, that was conventionally extra here, fidgeting. One knee bouncing, rubbing her upper arms with her bare hands. I had sold our heavy outer coats and the gloves at the foot of the ribbon. She stilled when I came in and looked expectantly at me but said nothing. I tossed into her lap a bag that made a tumbling, clicking sound as it landed. Savardin gave it one frowning look and then turned her gaze to me, not moving to touch the bag or claim it in any way.
"What's this?"
10,000 shen, I said. It was the most commonly negotiable currency in this region, in easily transportable and spent chits. 10,000 would buy a lot here. It would buy passage to another system with enough left over to binge for several weeks.
Is that a lot?
Yes. Her eyes widened just slightly, and for half a second I saw calculation in her expression. Time for me to be direct. The room is paid up for the next 10 days. After that, I gestured at the bag on her lap. That should last you a while, longer if you're truly serious about staying off Kef. But that look, when she'd realized she had access to money, made me fairly certain she wasn't. Not really. For 6 seconds, Savardin looked down at the bag in her lap.
No.
She picked the bag up gingerly, between her thumb and forefinger, as though it were a dead rat, and dropped it on the floor.
I'm coming with you.
I didn't answer, only looked at her. Silence stretched out. Finally, she looked away, crossed her arms.
Isn't there any tea?
Not the sort you're used to.
I don't care.
Well, I didn't want to leave her here alone with my money and possessions. Come on, then. We left the room, found a shop on the main corridor that sold things for flavoring hot water. Savardin sniffed one of the blends on offer, wrinkled her nose.
This is tea?
The shop proprietor watched us from the corner of her vision, not wanting to seem to watch us. I told you it wasn't the sort you were used to. You said you didn't care. She thought about that a moment. To my utter surprise, instead of arguing or complaining further about the unsatisfactory nature of the tea in question, she said calmly,
"What do you recommend?"
I gestured my uncertainty. "I'm not in the habit of drinking tea."
"Not in the..."
She stared at me.
"Oh, don't they drink tea in the Gerentate?"
"Not the way you people do." And of course tea was for officers, for humans. Ancillaries drank water. Tea was an extra unnecessary expense, a luxury. So I had never developed the habit. I turned to the proprietor, a Nilter, short and pale and fat, in shirt sleeves, though the temperature here was a constant 4°C, and Savardin and I both still wore our inner coats. "Which of these has caffeine in it?" She answered pleasantly enough, and became pleasanter when I bought not only 250 grams each of two kinds of tea, but also a flask with two cups and two bottles, along with water to fill them. Savardin carried the whole lot back to our lodging, walking alongside me, saying nothing. In the room, she laid our purchases on the bed, sat down beside them, and picked up the flask, puzzling over the unfamiliar design. I could have showed her how it worked, but decided not to. Instead, I opened my newly claimed luggage and dug out a thick golden disc, 3 centimeters larger in diameter than the one I had carried with me, and a small, shallow bowl of hammered gold, 8 centimeters in diameter. I closed the trunk, set the bowl on it, and triggered the image in the disc. Savardin looked up to watch it unfold into a wide, flat flower in mother-of-pearl, a woman standing in its center. She wore a knee-length robe of the same iridescent white, inlaid with gold and silver. In one hand, she held a human skull, itself inlaid with jewels, red and blue and yellow, and in the other hand, a knife.
"That's like the other one," Savardin said, sounding mildly interested. "But it doesn't look so much like you."
"True," I answered, and sat cross-legged before the trunk.
"Is that a Gerontate god?"
"It's one I met traveling." Savardin made a breathy non-committal noise.
"What's its name?"
I spoke the long string of syllables which left Savardin nonplussed. "It means, she who sprang from the lily. She is the creator of the universe." This would make her Amat in Radchai terms.
"Ah,"
said Savardin, in a tone I knew meant she'd made that equation, made the strange god familiar, and brought it safely within her mental framework.
"And the other one?"
"A saint."
"What a remarkable thing that she should resemble you so much."
"Yes, although she's not the saint, the head she's holding is." Savardin blinked, frowned. It was very un-Radchai.
"Still."
Nothing was just a coincidence, not for Radchai. Such odd chances could, and did, send Radchai on pilgrimages, motivate them to worship particular gods, change entrenched habits. They were direct messages from Amat. "I'm going to pray now," I said. With one hand, Savardin made a gesture of acknowledgement. I unfolded a small knife, pricked my thumb, and bled into the gold bowl. I didn't look to see Savardin's reaction. No Radchai god took blood, and I hadn't troubled to wash my hands first. It was guaranteed to lift Radchai eyebrows, to register as foreign and even primitive. But Savardin didn't say anything. She sat silent for 31 seconds as I intoned the first of the 322 names of the Hundred of White Lily, and then she turned her attention to the flask and making tea. Savardin had said she'd lasted 6 months at her last attempt to quit Kef. It took 7 months to reach a station with a Radchai consulate. Approaching the first leg of the journey, I had told the purser in Savardin's hearing that I wanted passage for myself and my servant. She hadn't reacted, that I could see. Perhaps she hadn't understood. But I had expected a more or less angry recrimination in private when she discovered her status. And she never mentioned it. And from then on, I woke to find tea already made and waiting for me. She also ruined 2 shirts attempting to launder them, leaving me with 1 for an entire month until we docked at the next station. The ship's captain, she was Key, tall and covered in ritual scars, let fall in an oblique, circuitous way that she and all her crew thought I'd taken Savardin on as a charity case. Which wasn't far from the truth. I didn't contest it. But Savardin improved, and 3 months later, on the next ship, a fellow passenger tried to hire her away from me. Which wasn't to say she had suddenly become a different person, or entirely deferential. Some days she spoke irritably to me, for no reason I could see, or spent hours curled in her bunk, her face to the wall, rising only for her self-imposed duties. The first few times I spoke to her when she was in that mood, I only received silence in reply, so after that I left her alone. The Radchai consulate was staffed by the translator's office, and the consular agent's spotless white uniform, including pristine white gloves, argued she either had a servant or spent a good deal of her free time attempting to appear as though she did. The tasteful and expensive-looking, jeweled strands wound in her hair, and the names on the memorial pins that glittered everywhere on the white jacket, as well as the faint disdain in her voice when she spoke to me, argued servant. Though likely only one, this was an out-of-the-way posting.
As a visiting non-citizen, your legal rights are restricted. It was clearly a rote speech. You must deposit at minimum the equivalent of...
Fingers twitched as she checked the exchange rate.
500 shen per week of your visit, per person. If your lodging, food, and any extra purchases, fines, or damages exceed the amount on deposit, and you cannot pay the balance, you will be legally obligated to take an assignment until your debt is paid. As a non-citizen, your right to appeal any judgment or assignment is limited. Do you still wish to enter Raj space?
I do, I said, and laid 2 million shen chits on the slim desk between us. Her disdain vanished. She sat slightly straighter and offered me tea, gesturing slightly, fingers twitching again as she communicated with someone else. Her servant, it turned out, who, with a slightly harried air, brought tea in an elaborately enameled flask and bowls to match. While the servant poured, I brought out my forged gerentate credentials and placed those on the desk as well.
You must also provide identification for your servant, honored, said the consular agent, now all politeness.
My servant is a Rajchai citizen, I answered, smiling slightly, meaning to take the edge off what was going to be an awkward moment. But she's lost her identification and her travel permits. The consular agent froze, attempting to process that.
The honored Breck, said Savardin, standing behind me, in antique, effortlessly elegant Rajchai, has been generous enough to employ me and pay my passage home.
This didn't resolve the consular agent's astonished paralysis quite as effectively as Savardin perhaps had wished. That accent didn't belong on anyone's servant, let alone a non-citizen's. And she hadn't offered Savardin a seat or tea, thinking her too insignificant for such courtesies.
Surely you can take genetic information, I suggested. Yes, of course, answered the consular agent with a sunny smile, though your visa application will almost certainly come through before citizen...
Savardin, I supplied.
Before citizen Savardin's travel permits are reissued, depending on where she departed from and where her records are.
Of course, I answered and sipped my tea.
That's only to be expected.
As we left, Savardin said to me in an undertone,
What a snob! Was that real tea?
It was. I waited for her to complain about not having had any, but she said nothing more.
It was very good.
What are you going to do if an arrest order comes through instead of travel permits? She made a gesture of denial.
Why should they? I'm already asking to come back. They can arrest me when I get there, and I'll appeal. Do you think the consul has that tea shipped from home, or might someone here sell it?
Find out if you like, I said. I'm going back to the room to meditate. The consular agent's servant outright gave Savardin half a kilo of tea, likely grateful for the opportunity to make up for her employer's unintentional slight earlier. And when my visa came through, so did travel permits for Savardin, and no arrest order or any additional comment or information at all. That worried me, if only slightly, but likely Savardin was right. Why do anything else? When she stepped off the ship, there would be time and opportunity enough to address her legal troubles. Still, it was possible Rajchai authorities had realized I wasn't actually a citizen of the Gerentate. It was unlikely. The Gerentate was a long, long way from where I was going. And besides, despite fairly friendly, or at least not openly antagonistic, relations between the Gerentate and the Rajchai, As a matter of policy, the Gerentate didn't supply any information at all about its residents. Not to the Rauch. If the Rauch asked, and they wouldn't, the Gerentate would neither confirm nor deny that I was one of its citizens.